Chapter 5, Amphetamine Blues. The purchase of Elvis Presley's recording contract by RCA in November 1955 brought national and then international attention to the music scene in Memphis. Until then, the emerging young musicians had largely remained a Southern secret. The singles put out by Sun hit the charts below the Mason-Dixon line, as Sun artists stuck to touring Texas, Florida, Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Louisiana. Elvis had no network TV coverage until January 1956, and it would be another year before Cash made his television debut on the Jackie Gleason Show. Both Elvis and Carl Perkins burst onto the national scene in early 1956. Carl's Blue Suede Shoes, released January 1st, was the fourth best-selling single in March. Elvis's Heartbreak Hotel, released by RCA on January 27th, reached the number one spot in April. A new generation of mainstream white teenagers had caught on to the music previously considered rural, regional, or racial. Until Heartbreak Hotel, the industry considered Elvis a country artist, so his singles registered only on the country charts. Carl's Blue Suede Shoes broke all the norms and became the first song to simultaneously hit the pop, country, and R&B charts. If Carl had looked like Elvis, he would probably have become the king of rock and roll. Unfortunately, he was losing his hair fast at the age of 23. Just as Blue Suede Shoes climbed the charts, a car crash on the way to a recording of the Ed Sullivan Show put Carl out of action for 6 months. 12 days after the accident, while recuperating in bed, he saw Elvis announce on the Milton Berle Show that Blue Suede Shoes would be his next single. "Elvis had the looks on me," he told journalist Michael Lydon in 1968. "The girls were going for him for more reasons than music. Elvis was hitting them with sideburns, flashy clothes, and no ring on that finger. I had 3 kids. There was no way of keeping Elvis from being the man in that music." Johnny Cash wasn't far behind. Folsom Prison Blues had been a huge country hit, and on April 2, 1956, he recorded 4 tracks for potential follow-up, including I Walk the Line. Phillips thought the song was too slow and asked him to record a faster version for comparison. While driving back from a show later that month, Cash heard his new single played for the first time on Eddie Hill's late-night show on WSM. Upset to discover that Sam had pressed the fast version rather than the slow ballad that he had wanted, he returned to Memphis to plead his case with Phillips. Though he politely promised to think about switching the versions, Phillips had no intention of distributing the ballad. Phillips instinctively knew what would sell. I Walk the Line was the first Johnny Cash single to reach the pop charts, selling more than 2 million copies in the process. With his first big check, Cash moved out of the duplex on Tutwiler to a 2-bedroom house at 4492 Sandy Cove in the more upscale Berclair district of Memphis. He also upgraded his car. He gave his 1954 Portsmouth to Vivian's father and bought a maroon Lincoln with only 11,000 miles on the speedometer from country singer Ferlin Husky. Vacations, until then, meant visiting his parents in Dias. He now ventured farther from home, trips to New Orleans and Mexico with Vivian, and to the coast of Florida for deep sea fishing. Cash's success and the publicity that accompanied it not only affected him and Vivian, but his family back in Dias. Suddenly, they too were in the spotlight, and people began to treat them differently. "We couldn't believe what was happening," says Tommy Cash, who was 16 at the time and still in high school. "It changed all of our lives. Instead of being the Cash family from Arkansas, we were Johnny Cash's family. Instead of people asking me how my basketball was going, or asking Daddy how much cotton he was picking this summer, it was, 'How's Johnny? When's his new record coming out?' It was a total switch." Back on April 2nd, Cash also recorded Get Rhythm. Inspired by a conversation while having his shoes polished at the Memphis bus station, Cash wrote this song about a shoeshine boy with Elvis in mind. However, he always managed to strike a false note when he wrote rock and roll. The words of I Walk the Line had conviction. The words to songs like Rock and Roll Ruby, later cut by Warren Smith, and You're My Baby, which he gave to fellow Sun artist Roy Orbison, were merely exercises in generic writing. As he said in his 1978 song, I Will Rock and Roll With You, "I didn't ever play much rock and roll, 'cause I got so much country in my soul." On July 7, 1956, he achieved one of his life's ambitions by appearing on the Grand Ole Opry, country music's best-known and most prestigious showcase. He wore a white jacket with blue trim made by his mother, a black shirt, black trousers with a white stripe on the outside seams, and white shoes. 31-year-old country star Carl Smith introduced the brightest rising star of country music, not only to the 3,800 people in the crowd at Nashville's Ryman Auditorium, but to the tens of thousands in the radio audience beyond. Journalist Ben A. Green witnessed the one-song debut, a prelude to being invited to join the Opry, reported in the Nashville Banner. He had a quiver in his voice, but it wasn't stage fright. The haunting words of "I walk the line" began to swell through the building, and a veritable tornado of applause rolled back. The boy had struck home, where the heart is, with his song that is number two in the nation today. As his words filtered into the farthermost corners, many in the crowd were on their feet, cheering and clapping. They, too, had taken a new member into the family. Speaking after the show, Cash said that he was grateful, happy, and humble to have been invited to the show. It's the ambition of every hillbilly singer to reach the Opry in his lifetime. The Carter sisters and Mother Maybelle, who joined the Opry in 1950, appeared that night as well. Maybelle Carter, then 47, started her career as an original member of the Carter family, whose 1927 recordings for the Victor label jump-started the country music explosion. The Carter family, who were from southwestern Virginia, hadn't created a new form of music. They merely performed, and therefore helped preserve, the ballads, hymns, and mountain songs that had been handed down from parents to children for generations. As a great collector with a knack for embellishment, A.P. Carter, married to Maybelle's cousin Sarah, helped the Carter family preserve, on record, a rich heritage of American song. When A.P. and Sarah retired, Maybelle carried on with her three daughters, Helen, June, and Anita. They performed a mixture of novelty numbers, gospel, and the old songs associated with the Carter family, including "Will a Circle Be Unbroken," "Wildwood Flower," and "Will You Miss Me When I'm Gone." June and Anita, both with long dark hair and fetching smiles, set hearts aflutter in the Opry. In July 1952, June married Carl Smith, then one of the most successful recording artists in country music. But within 6 months, the marriage faced problems as Smith took extended and unexplained trips away from home. By September 1955, when June had their first child, Rebecca Carlene, the couple had already separated. Both Hank Williams and Elvis were smitten with Anita, who is described by a male contemporary as having been the quintessential Southern belle. Like any man of his age, Cash was delighted to meet June backstage after the show. She had apparently heard about him from Elvis, whom she knew very well. They exchanged small talk, and Cash promised to bring her copies of Folsom Prison Blues and I Walk the Line when he returned to the Opry on July 28th for his first show as a member. She later wrote that even then he seemed like a special person. As the story goes, Cash jokingly told June that one day he would marry her. In a photograph of the meeting, June in a low-cut dress is sitting on a chair in front of a radiator while Cash squats at her feet, holding on to a circular pillar. On July 24th, he wrote to Ted Freeman to tell him about the Opry and the success of I Walk the Line. "I've been on the Grand Ole Opry. I was on the PA show 3 weeks ago. Didn't you hear me? I'll be there this Saturday, so dig. No, I don't care about Hogjaw Hawkins stealing my sound," a reference to "It Would Be a Doggone Lie" by Hawkshaw Hawkins. "I'm always proud when someone tries to imitate. I've just come off a week tour in Florida with Hawkshaw, Gene Shepherd, and Jim Reeves. Hawkshaw says he's sorry he put that record out because everybody knows he's imitating me. But old Hogjaw is a fine feller and I like him." Hawkshaw Hawkins later died in the 1963 plane crash that also killed Patsy Cline. "Friend, if you ain't heard my record, you don't listen to the radio, because last week it was the number two record played by disc jockeys, and this week it's number three. It's also number three bestseller and number two on the jukeboxes. Old Ray Price got number one in all three charts this week. Crazy Arms is fine. I'm picking Sunday up at Roy Acuff's Dunbar Cave in Tennessee. In October, I'm making a tour with Farron Young in Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, and Virginia. I don't know how close we'll come to your house, but I'll let you know."